Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th of August, Anno Domini 2016, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Who? Who? I had no idea.
Yeah, I was afraid, yeah.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things, cheers, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. Yes, Steve is back. Having successfully eluded the law for weeks
in
the Midwest.
It looks like him.
It does look like him. We don't know for sure, but it looks like him.
It's been so long.
So we are back. Happy birthday, Annie Oakley. Today's her birthday. Pew, pew, pew. Also, for those of you who have asked last week, I said something to which one of our listeners took exception. We had a bit of a contretemps, and I was rude enough to hang up on him. I'm delighted to say that that person is a reasonable, understanding, and gracious human being. It's all good now, and we are done with that. No need to say another word.
Moving on.
And now the news. Microsoft released another batch of security patches on Tuesday, fixing 27 vulnerabilities in Windows, Microsoft Office, Internet Explorer, and its new Edge browser. The patches are organized in 9 security bulletins, 5 of which are rated critical, and the rest important, making this Microsoft patch bundle one of the lightest this year in terms of the number of patches. All of the issues resolved this month are in desktop deployments, but Windows servers might also be affected depending on their configuration. On the desktop side, the administrator should prioritize the Windows, the Microsoft Office and browser patches, MS-16-009, which is for Office, MS-16-095, which is for Internet Explorer, and MS-16-096, which is for Edge. These vulnerabilities are critical and could be exploited remotely through web pages or office documents to execute malicious code. Another critical security bulletin that applies to Windows but also to Microsoft Office, Skype, and Link is MS-16-097. It covers patches for 3 vulnerabilities in the Windows graphics component that allow for remote code execution through malicious web pages and documents. The MS-16-102 bulletin should also be in the priorities list because it addresses a critical remote code execution flaw in the Windows PDF library that's bundled with the Windows 8.1, Windows RT 8.1, Windows 10, Windows Server 2012, and Windows Server 2012 R2. Even though flagged as important and not critical, the MS-16-101 bulletin also stands out because it addresses 2 vulnerabilities in Windows authentication protocols, Kerberos and NetLogon. The MS-16-100 and MS-16-098 bulletins, both rated as important, could also get some attention from hackers because they cover flaws that could be used to further their attacks. So basically, it's kind of everything. The 16-100 allows attackers to bypass the Windows Secure Boot feature, by the way. Disables code integrity check. So that's pretty big. Kernel mode drivers are fixed. Anyway, there's a bunch of them. 27 flaws are fixed in a bunch of updates, and you should definitely install them if you want your machine to be as secure as any Microsoft machine ever is. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org.
Is that a backhanded compliment?
Yeah, it's certainly something. And that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Patch Tuesday, 27 flaws fixed. The choices are I've already patched, haven't patched yet, my system won't take the patches, and win what now? So far, of course, win what now is ahead. Followed by I've already patched, my system won't take the patches and haven't patched yet. Now I know you're going to have more to say about this. So if you go into the forums, scroll down on the right, you'll see under fascinating stuff, the first link is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least the very first item under poll discussions is 13 August 16, Patch Tuesday. 27 flaws fixed. So far, three people have posted. We'd be delighted to get your opinion on it all as well. And by the way, as long as you're at the website, you might as well check out the top post of the week. We have been the folks at Super Anti-Spyware have been kind enough to give us some pro serial numbers to give out to people for Super Anti-Spyware. So we've been giving them away. Week two ended with Tech Age Guy winning this week. First week was Racer Bob, and we are now in Super Anti-Spyware giveaway number three. It's really, really easy to do this. All you have to do is click on that link, Super Anti-Spyware giveaway number three. Just click on the title, and it will bring up the post, and all you have to do is leave a response. Which means, yes, you have to be a member, and yes, you have to be logged in. You know what? Get over yourself. You leave a response, and as everybody's pointing out, it's a hell of a lot better than the lotto. First week, there were, I think, 14 people in the thing. The second week, there were 17. So if you have not become part of it, and this coming Saturday, so it's a full week, so those of you listening to the podcast can also join in. This coming Saturday morning, I will pick the winner. All you have to do is leave a comment. Don't bother to leave more than one comment. The software will delete any additional comments.
Which is only fair.
Which is only fair. Everybody gets one chance at the thing. So all you have to do is to leave a comment on the post, and you're in. And we'll give away another one next Saturday. So what you do is you install the free version, and then you go in there and then put your winning serial number in, and that lets you have the pro version for a full year.
Nothing wrong with that.
It's a very cool. It's a $30, okay, $29.95 value.
$30.
$30 value. Yeah. And our users are smart. They understand that $29.95 is basically $30.
And that one guy that's going to say no.
Right, right. That's why I say it's $29.95. So it's a $30 value, and you get it for absolutely free if you're the winner. So enter today. Now, if you are new, if this is your first comment, if you are new to the commenting of posts, then your comment will not show up right away. I have to go in and okay it. I have to approve the first comment. This helps us at least a little bit with spam. So just one of the ways we try to keep spam out of the forums and out of the comments and out of the site in general. So if you don't see your post right away, it's because it's your first post and I haven't yet managed to do that. But I do it. I do it every day. Usually in the evening, sometimes twice a day. So just be patient. You'll show up eventually, and then and you'll be good to go. And, of course, you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. We're happy to hear from you. You must all be inside. There's nobody out in the world today.
Yeah, I was just saying.
You must be inside sitting in your air-conditioned computer room.
Unless they're in a pool.
Or you're out by the pool, in which case, give us a call. Let us know. We'll be over.
Yeah, with the radio on and listening to some, great computer advice. So
exactly.
What else you got to do?
Exactly. So... Yeah, it's a
I think we're live.
Okay.
It says we're live. Yeah,
Yay. The
video stream is running.
Because Steve is here, we are indeed recording this show, so you can listen to us live. Do you not need this anymore? Is that what happened here?
Leave that out for me. I might need it again.
Okay.
I seem to have better luck getting through the proxy server on Wi-Fi.
Interesting.
Than I do on Ethernet, even though it's the same
backstream
network.
Who knows? But yes, so we're in on. We're in on that, and of course we're streaming live, and of course because Steve is here, we are also on YouTube again. So all those links, by the way, are on our website in the upper right-hand corner. All the links are there. You can join us through any one of those. see our smiling faces. And if that doesn't turn you off of this show, I don't know what will. But
Too many views.
But in the meantime, we're going to go to the phones, and we're going to talk to Marty from Hamlin, New York. Hi, Marty. What's up?
Hi, Nick. Thanks for taking my call. I've just got a question about iPads and styluses.
Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that bit.
I'm just, I just want to know what your thoughts are. You know, I've been, I've gotten this app download called GoodNotes, and I also see where there's styluses that they have for it. I just wondered your thoughts on various styles for iPads.
Is this the regular iPad or the iPad Pro?
Just a regular iPad.
Okay. Because Apple does make their own pencil for the iPad Pro that has a much finer line. That actually tends to be the biggest differentiating point between the different styluses available is how fine a line you can draw if you intend to use it for drawing.
Well, I intended to use it for note-taking and things like that.
Most of the styluses have a rubber tip on them, and it's a because the iPad uses what's called a capacitance sensor. It's not a pressure sensor. It measures the electrical conductivity of your finger. So that's how they get the stylus to work. There are skinny ones. There's fat ones. There's long ones. There's thin ones. Nick has some tchotchke styluses. He's passing out to anyone that happens to be here at the studio.
Yeah, right. Kind of the three of us.
Yeah. In general, they're all pretty much the same. They have kind of a rubbery, spongy tip to them. And there is one called the Jot, which does make a finer line, and it has a little plastic disc that you rest your stylus on, basically. So when you're touching the iPad screen, it rests on this plastic disc while you're drawing with the line. So in many programs you can take notes with a stylus or even your finger, but it saves it as a graphic. I'm not sure of any actual handwriting recognition apps that exist to turn the graphic of your handwriting into actual text.
Okay. All right. I just was wondering any ones that you recommended any particular ones, because this app that I'm using is GoodNotes is very good, and it lets you take notes and stuff, and I just want to do a little better job with my writing on these notes, that's all. I just wondered if you had any recommendations.
Not specifically. Paper by 53 has been a very popular writing and drawing app. There was one before styluses got popular. There was one called Audio Note Taker, where it would actually record the audio of whatever you're taking notes on while you're taking notes, and it would link your note to that piece in the audio track. So if you wanted to go back and listen to that thing that you just took a note on, you could. And that was a neat one for a while, too.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your taking my call. Thank you.
Sure. No problem.
Thanks. Yeah, everybody loves the idea of being able to take notes and turning them into text. And there are a couple of apps that do that.
Ask someone else to read your handwriting, and then you realize how hard a thing it is for the computer to read your
That's
handwriting.
That's what I was just going
to
say. Just because it can doesn't mean it will.
Speaking of stylus, because back when I had the business going full time, and we'd get samples of pens. I've been getting a few now that are a pen and a stylus.
Pen at one end, a stylus at the other.
I got a few of those floating around. They're great.
I have to be careful when I hand one of those to a customer, because they always want to unclick the pen and then scratch the iPad with the pen end.
Use the spongy end. But the new phone that I've got coming has a stylus right in it.
Yep.
Now, was it the Galaxy 6 or 7? One of them had one of the first one Galaxies that had the stylus built into the phone.
Oh,
the stylus
Note 4.
The stylus Note 4. Would plug in and then lock in place. Apparently, the stylus would fit backwards.
Yes.
And if you push a little harder than normal, it would lock into place
and never come out
again. You would physically have to break the phone to get it out. But what was neat by having the stylus as part of the phone, when you walk away and leave your stylus behind, the phone beeps at you.
Yep.
And if you walk away from your phone and have the stylus with you, the stylus would vibrate or something.
Yeah.
To let you know if you lost one or the other.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Now with the new Note 7, you can't put the stylus in wrong. Yeah. They've only got one way to do it.
Yeah. Well, and Samsung's answer was well, you should have read the manual that tells you what way to put it in.
Yeah, duh.
It sounded so much like a Steve Jobs answer.
Yeah.
You're holding it wrong.
Yes.
Well, yeah, you put it in wrong. That's not our fault.
Right. Exactly. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. It is Sound Bites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David Wright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. On Thursday, Microsoft offered a master class on why building backdoors into secure systems are a bad idea. Two security researchers who go by the handles at Never Released and at The Wackolian, which I like.
Really? Really? Someone decided that was a good name for their company?
No. It's a Twitter handle.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Someone decided that was a good name for a Twitter handle?
Apparently they did.
Actually, it is a pretty good name for a Twitter handle.
It is a pretty good name for a Twitter handle. Recently announced in a blog post that malicious actors can bypass Windows secure boot feature on vulnerable machines. If exploited, this would allow bad guys to load all kinds of software on a target machine, from boot kits and root kits to a completely different operating system. The researchers says, researchers say they first noticed notified Microsoft about the issue around March or April of this year. Secure boot is a feature of the Unified Extensible Firmware Interface, or UEFI, or UEFI, that was first added in Windows 8. It makes sure components loaded onto your PC during boot are trusted. The whole point of secure boot is to prevent you from putting Linux, is to prevent rogue software from loading onto your machine.
Yeah, it's more likely UEFU.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, Microsoft created a backdoor of sorts for secure boot by creating a policy that allows developers to load software without the usual integrity checks. The need for such a policy, perhaps better thought of as a rule that governs how secure boot operates, was honest enough. Microsoft wanted to allow for testing various builds of Windows without the need for all the usual checks. As you can imagine, having this policy available to the public would be a very bad idea, since it would allow anyone to bypass secure boot, thus rendering the feature pointless. Naturally, the policy leaked online, allowing anyone with enough hacker chops to create malware in it and attack vulnerable machines. Where it all gets really tricky is that some Windows 10 devices can't turn off UEFI, and thus secure boot, to prevent the bypass, such as Windows phones and lowly Windows RT machines. Anybody actually using an RT machine? Microsoft has already released two security patches, one in July and one in August, to try and fix the problem. Apparently, however, these fixes are not completely sufficient, though they do help. Regardless, if you haven't updated your Windows device in a while, installing both of those updates is important to gain some protection from this potential threat. The impact on you at home, well, while this is particularly nasty security flaw, an attacker still needs either physical access to your PC or administrative privileges for it to be of any use. That means the usual security precautions apply. Always run antivirus software to keep malware from seeking to gain administrative access to your machine. Be careful where you go online, which attachments you open. Never leave your PC unattended in public. Finally, always keep up with the latest security patches for Windows and your installed software, especially your browser. So, Microsoft has a back door. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. You know, this is the problem with any sort of security system. If you put in any sort of bypass, which is generally what they call a back door, it's a way into the system without having to actually do all the stuff. You will find somebody, it gets out, and people know about it, and then you might as well not have a security system at all.
Mm-hmm.
UEFI boot has been the bane of the Linux community forever, since it means you can't easily buy a Windows machine and then put Linux on it. Now, of course, that'll be much easier, and in general, it also means that the people who do these things for bad reasons, we'll find a much easier way to do this stuff. So,
yeah, there's always going to be that. It's been that way forever, in a decade. I mean, folks have good intentions, but those good intentions, unfortunately, usually through maybe 2% find other ways to spoil it for so many others.
Yep.
And again, it just a small group, but yet, you know, like you say, those back doors are essential sometimes because it saves time and a lot of effort in what you're trying to do with the system. That, you know, it's a double-edged sword.
Yep, yep.
And it was probably put there with completely innocuous.
Yeah, good intentions.
Like
intentions.
Said, it was a big deal. They want to be able to let developers develop.
Yeah.
You know, their minds are on developing, not on, oh, now before I put this on, I have to do this and this and this and make it secure and blah, blah, blah. But I'm trying to test a feature. All I want to do is you don't have to pay me. I just want to test the feature. You can pay me. I don't mind that, but you don't have to. That's all I'm saying. So they want to test. Dave has his money out. I think he's counting his fortune. I'm not sure. I'm not sure we have enough time in just 2 hours for you to do that, Dave.
You don't want to get my bill.
Yeah. Oh, I will trade you right now. I will trade you any bill you want to name. But basically, it's we've seen it over and over again. People put in a back door for good reasons or bad reasons. There was a bunch of stuff that the government insisted on back doors in, and of course, those all leaked. And it just goes over. It happens over and over and over. And it's
the Russian government passed. Well, I don't know if the government passed it, but Putin signed it. An encryption bill, like the Burr-Feinstein bill that got defeated here in America, that pretty much every communication in Russia must be decryptable and handed over to the government on request, must be stored for 6 months, and the metadata must be stored for 3 years.
Yep.
So we're already hearing about companies that are pulling out of Russia because they don't want to hand over the back doors to the Russian government.
That's right.
No.
You shouldn't have a back door. You should not have a back door.
Or even the front door. So Russia wants the keys. And we've seen time and time again in Brazil, I'm surprised this hasn't come up more during the Olympics, every now and then a Brazilian court orders WhatsApp to hand over somebody's text messages, and WhatsApp says, we can't, they're encrypted.
Right.
And so they've put the senior vice president of WhatsApp in jail. They've frozen $6 million of Facebook money because WhatsApp doesn't have a bank account, apparently, in Brazil, but Facebook does. And they shut off WhatsApp for the entire country.
Yep.
And 100 million people in Brazil use WhatsApp, and so there's usually outrage, and it comes back on the next day. But, so the courts just don't get it. That, mm-hmm. You know, we cannot do this. It is not built into this. So the answer is rewrite the program so you can give someone a backdoor.
Right.
Well, no. You know, number one, no. Number two, people won't upgrade.
Right.
And the bad guys are going to use something else anyway that doesn't have a backdoor.
Yeah, if they don't find that, they'll find something else.
Yep.
I'm actually on WhatsApp right now because my daughter's traveling through Europe.
It's huge in the rest of the country. It never really caught on in the U.S., but the rest of the country is the rest of the world. Yes, thank you. Especially Asia, where long-distance cell phone bills are so high. The guy across the street's in a different country, so you know it's a horrible expense.
Yeah.
So WhatsApp is huge.
Yeah.
Over there.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. And as usual, you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Have a question. Have an Apple iPhone 6S, and every now and then I try to get live background to work, and so far since I've had the phone, I've never gotten it to work, only unless I'm in the actual settings and you know tooling around trying to see which one you want. But if you select it, so I'm just wondering, am I doing something wrong, or is this thing just never worked and never going to work, or what? And I can listen offline.
Oh, okay.
So you said it was a 6S, right? So
it's
the newer phone that has the ability.
Thanks, Larry.
Most people turn live background off because it can disorient them.
It takes a lot of battery.
Takes a lot of battery life. Yeah. So basically, live background is a feature on the newer iPhones that instead of having a static picture as the background or wallpaper on your phone, you can actually have a live photo. So in essence, animation. You put enough photos together fast enough, it's a movie.
Right. Right.
And so you should be able to set that in your settings under wallpaper. There are certain apps that do, certain wallpapers built in that do live background. And I'm scrolling down through the list here. You can use your own live photo. So if you shoot a photo with the iPhone 6S, one of the things it does...
Make it live.
So live is a preference you turn on. So every time you shoot a still photo, it actually makes it live. So it grabs a second and a half before and a second and a half after, gives you a little three-second video of that photo. You can use that as your wallpaper as well. So it may be that you've got that setting turned off in the settings app, and I'm going to post this link here on our website, Larry, so that you can find it. It is a neat option to do, but it does take up a lot of CPU cycles and therefore a lot of battery. So it may not be something you want to leave on all the time.
Right. I am sorry you hung up, Larry, because I would want to know if you tried it. He said it works in the settings, but it doesn't save.
There's a button when you pick it, whether you want to set it as your lock screen or your home screen or both. So maybe he's setting it as one and not the other, and he wants to do it in both. And you have an option, the still photo that we've done forever, the perspective photo, which as you angle your phone, you see the photo from a different perspective, or a live photo. So you have six different choices you have to set. The wonderful thing about choices is there's so many of them, to set exactly what you want it to do. So you have to turn on live photo, and then you have to set it to your lock screen or your home screen or both.
At any rate, Steve is going to post this, and hopefully, Larry, that'll lead you through the various sets of steps that you'll have to go through.
Wrong link.
You good?
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Pat. What's up?
Well, first of all, welcome back, Steve.
Thanks.
And my question is, I have been using my webcam to record some material for Google Hangouts, and it works fine if you're about 3 to 5 feet away from the subject, but if you get further away, it doesn't seem to record as well. Steve, I'm wondering what kind of recording do you use for your YouTube videos?
Well, that's...
Sound, which one sound bites.
We've got a Logitech C910, I think it is, which is a wide-angle HD, so that we can get both Nick and I wide-angle, C920. But that's sort of the general limitation of webcams. They are designed to sit in front of your computer and shoot 3 to 4 feet away. You may need to go to a higher tier camera that has a longer focal length. So if you look at the picture of Dave, he's about 6 feet away from the camera, and it's not as good a picture because he's six. Even though that's an HD camera, also, although that was a $30 camera, because I knew it was going to be farther away, we don't need to spend that much on it. Yeah.
So if you
get about 2 feet away from that camera, you'll look really good.
No, it's okay. Far, far away is good for me.
But you want to look at the focal length of the camera specs before you buy it. And a lot of times it will say 3 feet to infinity. Well, that means 3 feet.
Yeah, it really does, yeah.
Yes, it will take pictures to infinity, but if you want to see them with any clarity, 3 feet. And the other thing that I also do streaming with is the Sighted Users Group. And we wanted a camera with high enough quality to point at the projection screen so people could see the slides on the screen. We have since found a workaround for that. There's a free program called CamTwist that's a video switcher program. And what it lets you do is you can have multiple cameras set up, and it will let you switch between them. You can put in text overlays, so that's how I get the date and time stamped onto it. I've got the picture-in-picture feature, so we can have all three of us on camera at once. And there's also a setting where it makes your desktop a camera. So you can feed your desktop into your camera a program so that then, anything you see on your desktop screen, say you're showing a program and, want people to be able to read your computer screen, that can be part of the video feed as well.
Right. But in general, Steve is right. Webcams are designed for you sitting in front of your computer. So they have a fairly fixed and fairly narrow focal length. Depth of field. If you want something better, then you have to spend significantly more money depending on how far away you want things to get. So if you're doing a hangout and you want to show a room behind you, you have a friend who was doing hangouts with dogs in the background. She wanted to show her dogs. Well, that's not going to happen easily or well from your webcam built into your laptop. Does that make sense?
Is there any way I could use my Sony Handycam, maybe like with the HDMI output?
Most likely, you would need to have that input on your computer. So you might need an HDMI to USB import, or if your camera has USB input.
Pat, we stay on the line. Don't hang up. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me and Nick Francesco, Pat from Batavia, and you. It's 20 minutes. It's 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, North Star Radio, every time I hear that, I think I used to sell North Star computers. And I kept, because it's a computer show, I keep expecting to say North Star computers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Pat, we have Pat from Batavia still waiting on the line. Go ahead, Pat and Steve.
Yeah, so okay. Just
to be clear, if you just back up a step, because over the commercial, some of my memory has faded. So. Yes. I believe you said if I used an HDMI output from the Sony camcorder, or no, yeah, it's a Handycam.
Yeah, it depends on what outputs it has.
USB input on the laptop.
Yeah, if you're lucky, the camera has a USB out also, which then you can plug to the USB on your computer. If not, you need to get an HDMI to USB audio input box, I was trying to remember. I think DigiDesign is one of the big companies that do. No, they're audio in. I gotta remember my video in. To get a video input box to get that video into your computer. So it works the easiest if you have USB on your camera.
Yeah, I do, but it doesn't seem to recognize it. And I'm wondering if it's any difference because it's actually a recorder versus being just a camera.
We have sometimes seen that you need to have the camera think it's recording. You don't have to have a tape in it or anything, but just hit record, and then it will send the video out to the USB port into your computer. And then for video input, it's the Blackmagic's Intensity series. So Blackmagic is one of the big companies that does video input cards. So it's basically HDMI to USB. And depending on how much you spend is how many input jacks you get. So they also do really, really high-end. They do SDI, they do 4K, they do super high-end stuff. But their intensity it only starts at a couple hundred dollars.
Okay, sounds good. Now, one last point. Am I coming through pretty clear?
Pretty clear.
Okay, good. Then I want to give you a little plug, Nick. I am calling through my Chromebook with information I picked up by going to the Rochester Googles group that meets first Thursday.
First Thursday of the month.
Yeah, I always try to go on the second one, and that's why I miss it. So first Thursday of the month, I make a mental note of it, and I know put it on my calendar. So okay, we'll let that go. But thank you guys all around for all you've done for people in the area and the listening area. And welcome back, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, with the Rochester Goo, thanks, Pat. We appreciate that. The Rochester, and that's in from Batavia. So Rochester Googles meets the first Thursday of every month at St. John's Meadows at 7 o'clock. And we go for a couple of hours and we talk about various thises and thatses having to do with Chromebooks and Google itself and Docs and, you know, all the Drive stuff and pretty much everything Google does and how to integrate them and how to play around with them and all the other things that you can do with them.
I think I talked to another gentleman in this morning, dropped his computer off to have me clean it up and that. And again, he goes, yeah, and I'm a little worried. He goes, I know maybe I can get a little more time out of this. And again, I asked him, all right, I says, so what do you do with it? He goes, basically, the only thing reason I use this is for my online banking. I go, get a Chromebook.
Yeah.
He goes, what? So I went up, got mine, brought it down. Of course, it was off, and I turned it on, and boop, pops right up. And he goes, whoa, that was fast. I go, yeah, 9-hour battery life. I says, there's the Chrome operating system. And he goes, well, what about photos? Boom, I pulled up the photos. There's all my photos up there on storage, free of charge, thank you. And I saw him with the documents, you know, docs and all that. And he's, yeah, well, what about viruses in it? I go, it's not an operating system. It's just a browser.
Right.
It doesn't get them. I'm going shopping when I get home looking for them.
Yep. I was actually showing somebody the other day, and they said, yeah, but, you know, I have a lot of pictures. Well, here's all your pictures. Well, I like to have them locally. Okay, these are local. Well, I like music. Okay, here's about 45 hours of music locally. How do you get all that on your hard drive? I said, I have a 256-gig SD card stuck in the side of this thing. I've got about 15 days of music. I got about 8 days of movies. I got about 1,000 pictures. And I've still got gigs and gigs and gigs left on this thing. And, oh, by the way, if I fill it up, I can pop it out and put it in another one. So it's not like I'm going to run out of space anytime soon.
Yeah. No, not too easy.
You can do all of that stuff. It's super simple.
What did the card cost you for the 256?
I don't even remember. No. I got it as part of a pack.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it was on Woot, and I got it as part of a pack.
I might do that with mine. Although I've been using jump drives.
Yeah.
You know, I got
the prices are coming down so drastically, it's almost ridiculous. I just found a high-performance 10X SD card on Amazon for $80.
$80, yeah.
256 gig.
This was less because it's a deeply off brand.
Yeah.
And it was on Woot. So I really expected not much, but it didn't cost me much. Yeah.
Interestingly, the higher the capacity, the more expensive per gig they get.
Yeah.
The 512 gig version is $200.
Right.
But gigs in this little thumbnail size thing.
It's ridiculous.
I've got this picture about, you know, this is 1K, you know, 20 years ago, and then, you know, 10 years ago it was 100 megs, and, you know, 5 years ago it was 100 gigs, and now, you know, we're closing in on a terabyte on an SD card.
That's exactly right. That's right. Sony
in fact,
has
Samsung just announced a 16 terabyte? Oh, I haven't checked your news stories. Yeah, is that one of them?
It's one of the news stories. I think I put it in. Yeah. Seagate, 60 terabyte SSD card.
60 terabyte SD card. It's only $10,000.
Yeah.
Now, next year, it'll be $5,000.
And the year after that,
it'll be $100.
Yep.
Yeah. Just ridiculous how fast storage is falling. In fact, somewhere I've got a picture. Maybe I'll post it. The first one megabyte IBM hard drive is the size of a full refrigerator.
Yeah. I had a picture of it being stowed on a plane.
Yeah, that's maybe I got it from you.
Yeah. It's enormous. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Rich?
Hi, I've got an observation and a question. I think we got feedback.
Yeah.
Observation and question regarding Wi-Fi signal. Can I ask you that?
Sure.
Last night, I am streaming from my second floor router down to the TV room, one floor between us, and it's Wi-Fi signal, of course, and I decided to use my headphones because my partner didn't want to hear the audio, so I got the Bluetooth signal working, and I'm listening to the headphones, and all of a sudden the movie started breaking up and whatever that is. Can those signals interfere with each other? Do you guys know?
It's certainly not impossible. It could be coincidence because who's your internet service provider?
Time Warner.
Okay.
Was your roommate also streaming something different?
No.
Okay.
No. It was just me.
Okay.
But I will add this. I have yet to install my Wi-Fi amplifier. What is the term for the device that you put halfway between?
A range extender.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I have yet to install that, and we'll see if my movies from Netflix and Roku
right.
and all that
well,
stuff
here's
does
the, here's
not break
the thing.
Up anymore.
Yeah, but here's the thing. That may not be the reason. You know, you can use your phone or a laptop or whatever to see what the strength of the signal is. But if it doesn't happen, if you don't have a problem when you're not using Bluetooth, and you do have a problem when you're using Bluetooth, it's because they're both running at about 2.5 gigahertz, and they're interfering with each other. The easiest way to solve this is, depending on what your TV or Roku box or whatever it is you have connected does, if it will accept something in the 5 gigahertz range, and if, in fact, your router will also do 5 gigahertz, you might want to put it there. See, I had the same problem. On the downstairs television, I get a fine signal, but it's if in the 2.5 gigahertz range, if I want to use my Bluetooth headset, I have an issue because they're interfering with each other.
Oh, I see.
So I set the Roku box to read at 5 gigahertz, and there's no longer any sort of interference.
So I should try to set the Roku little gizmo at 5, but I need to set the router upstairs at 5 as well.
Right, so do the router first.
Now some
most of them will do both 2.5 and 5 gigahertz.
Mine will, I believe, but the question is, how the heck do I do that? Do I have to go into Netgear's menus of some kind?
Yes, you go into Netgear's menus, you turn on 5 gigahertz, you can set a separate or the same password.
And you want to make sure that the router can do both frequencies at the same time. Some of the
right.
earlier routers were one or the other. And if yours is one of those kinds, then you have to change all your devices to 5 gigahertz.
Right.
Or the newer ones will do both at the same time. And so you just change the one or two to 5 gigahertz, and that can help.
Right.
And if the router is going to run both at the same time, how will I know it's indeed on the 5?
Well, when you set it up, you'll
you give it the 5 a different name.
Yeah, you give the 5 a slightly different name, and you might even give it a different password, and then you'll know which one you're on.
I got it. That might do it. Thank you.
There you go.
And the range extenders almost never make anything faster. They extend
right.
the range.
Yeah.
Of the wireless signal. Your wireless signal, you know, and is the most common wireless these days, that's 400 megabit. The best you're going to get out of cable internet is 50 if you're paying for the fastest you want. So your internet service is always much slower. Well, not always. Is almost always.
For the most part.
Is almost always much slower than the wireless.
Rub it in.
If you have a newer AC wireless network, then your AC wireless signal is 1300 and your cable is still only 50.
And
so
again,
even now with your 1 gigabit
yeah.
green light, your wireless is faster at 1300.
And right. still in all, you know, I mean, you can talk speed there, but then it's also how many of your folks are on that
right.
D-SLAM.
And so he could have been watching a movie that someone else somewhere in the world started watching.
Yep.
And so it got a little slower at the source end,
right.
not
but
at
it
his
It is
end.
Likely in this particular case it was Bluetooth interference.
Yeah.
Because they're both on the same frequency.
Mm-hmm. And your mic...
Go ahead.
No, so, and your microwave oven is also 2.4 gigahertz.
Right.
So,
but in general, with the two of them happening right at the same box
yep.
at the same time, it is very likely that that was the issue. But so it's what I had to do. Now, 5 gigahertz is generally a little faster, but a slightly less distance.
And it doesn't go through walls as well.
In my case, it's just going through a floor because the router's
mm-hmm.
right upstairs.
Yep.
So that's not a big deal, but yeah, I can't get 5 gigahertz out in the yard at all, whereas mm-hmm. I can get 2.5 yeah. nicely.
And that's a case where a range extender or signal booster would help,
mm-hmm.
Because you can put it on the other floor.
Right.
They're best if you can hardwire the range extender to your main router, but many of them will also wirelessly extend the network. But you usually put those in a place where you're having trouble reaching, which means the range extender has trouble reaching. So you have to let go halfway between where
right.
where the problem is. So you still get a good signal to pick up and pass it off, unless you can run that Ethernet cable.
Well, I got my router down the basement, but I've got it positioned that it goes right on up to where my office is, and above my office is my bedroom.
Yep.
And also I use it outside, so it's right out that door.
Yeah.
So I get good signals, you know, boom, boom, boom,
because it's a straight shot. Yeah, a lot of times the cable and DSL people will run your router into the basement because that's where all the other wires are. And on the roof of the basement, the ceiling of the basement, is giant steel I-beams holding the house up. And giant steel I-beams block radio signals.
And all the ductwork and ductwork, your pipes. Yeah. And
so that's the worst place to put your Wi-Fi router. Yep. It's okay to put the cable router there and then string one Ethernet wire maybe up beside a duct so you get that above the all that metal and put your wireless router there.
Right. So, yeah, it there's a whole science to where and how you place wireless device, wireless routers and things like that, and having those things in the right place and knowing what's there. You know, we've said this a million times. If you could see radio waves, you wouldn't see anything because they'd be blocking. There's so many of them that block everything. But knowing where that signal can go is hard. All right, listen, you've wasted an hour of your life, but we're going to give you a chance to do it again on the other side. So just stay with us, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. Maybe not Steve Ray. He seems to be dying right at the moment. And you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple of minutes.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can... How did I lose that session already? What is wrong with you?
Our computer's wonderful.
Yeah. No, sometimes they're not. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. You know, I clicked the Remember Me box. I checked that, and apparently it does not, in fact, remember me. Okay, whatever. You know, we started to talk about this.
I won't touch that
one. Yeah, right. We started to talk about this, but let me read the news story. There aren't many shockers when it comes to storage capacity, but try this one on for size. Seagate has announced a 60 terabyte SSD card. SSD card that may ship as early as next year. Seagate showed the drive at the Flash Memory Summit in Silicon Valley on Tuesday. It's called a technology demonstration, which means there could still be a few kinks to work out. But if Seagate can deliver as planned, the drive would have close to four times the capacity of the largest SSD available currently, which is Samsung's PM1633A SSD.
Well, let alone SSD, the HD. I think 8 gigabytes is the biggest single HD.
Well, you can get more, but
you can raid them. Yeah.
Right. And you can get multiple. You can get internally pre-rated drives, I guess, is one way to put that. But the drive will be aimed at servers and flash arrays, where it could meet the growing demand for storage fueled by the mobile devices, online video, and emerging Internet of Things. The SAS, or serial attached SCSI drive, fits into standard enterprise hard drive 3.5-inch storage slots, Seagate said. It didn't provide technical details of the announcement. It said the drive is based on a flexible architecture that could eventually scale to 100 terabytes in the same form factor. So are you lusting after a 60-terabyte SSD? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. 15.
Unfortunately, the SAS interface is only 12 gigabits per second.
Right.
So that now we got another new interface to catch up.
Right.
Actually, SAS is an older interface. It's just more expensive, but it runs faster than SATA. Right now, SATA 2 is only 6 gigabits
right.
Per second. But server arrays, you know, back-end storage racks almost always use SAS, which I have to point out is, as you mentioned, serial attached SCSI, and Macintosh was the first mainstream computer to have SCSI ports.
Interestingly, Steve Jobs hated the name SCSI.
Yeah.
Small Computer Systems Interface, SCSI, and everybody pronounces it SCSI, and Steve Jobs wanted to pronounce it sexy because there's nothing SCSI about Macs. That's a quote.
Yep. That never caught on.
And then one of the few times Steve Jobs failed to influence the entire world to do what he wanted.
So this is an acronym that contains an acronym.
Right. Right.
So it should be SASESI.
Right.
That's computer people are lazy. We want three-letter acronyms.
Right. So, yeah. So 60 terabytes is a lot. But this comes down to, and what you just mentioned also comes down to, you know, a friend of mine was talking about, I want to upgrade my hard drive so that it's faster, so I want to put in a SCSI hard drive. An SSD card. I said, it's not going to be faster. You've already got a 6 gigabit connection in your machine. And the hard drive you've got in there is 6 gigabit speed. So putting in something that does 30 gigabits isn't going to help you because you're still going through a 6 gigabit thing. It's like buying a Ferrari and then driving it on the expressway at 55.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's,
you simply cannot go faster than that interface. Don't bother.
You're just moving the bottleneck.
That's what we've said
for decades.
Yep, that's where RAID comes in. If you can have 2 or 3 or 4 or 6 or 20 6 gigabit interfaces, your data can run faster than that. So now the drives are too slow for the interface. So we need faster drives, and so you're always jumping back and forth.
Right, but that's why putting together a system is so difficult. I mean, you can pull stuff off the shelves and make a machine, and for the general public, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But if what you're doing, for example, is video editing, and you're editing an actual movie, and you want it to be as fast as possible, you're going to spend a metric bucket load of cash.
Yep.
Because you want the fastest possible sets of interfaces, and even then it's going to be only as fast as the slowest piece. So you have to be very careful as to what you do. Oh, your machine must be so fast because it's got an SSD. It's only as fast as it is.
Yep.
And it's not going to be faster no matter what I do at the other end of that connection.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We had mentioned
it is what it is.
Mentioned earlier about Blackmagic and their video interfaces. They also have a disk test program. It's free on the App Store that will test your computer's disk IO.
Yep.
And it will tell you how good a video stream you can run. You know, from SD all the way up to, you know, to 4K 222.
Right.
And it's always frustrating to see how slow your hard drive is.
Well,
compared to an SSD RAID.
Yeah.
So you get a RAID 6 with SSDs in it over a SAS connection. And yeah, now, you know, that's what they use in Hollywood for doing movies.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it becomes an exercise in where's the bottleneck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eggs.
And unless you understand all the pieces of your machine, because half of those pieces are built onto the motherboard. So let's go look at the motherboard. And oh, wait, then the data must be controlled through the
PCI bus.
PCI bus. And then that's controlled by the CPU. And so at what point, where do the data go? You can get data streams that go right from the hard drive to the video card. And bypass the computer, so they are as close, as fast as they can be. But still, what's the speed of that connection? Terabits can you pass through that instantly? Because unless every component in your system, and I mean every component, has at least one comma in the number, you could be faster.
Yep.
Yep.
So right now, the PCI Express 2.0 with 16 lanes will do 64 gigabit transfer.
Right.
And that's got at least one comma in the price tag.
Yes.
Of the drive controller, not just the computer.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Every component.
Yep.
I remember back in the day, I had somebody come in, you know, they wanted me to upgrade the video because they wanted to get it faster. So, all right. So, you know, I put in a faster video card for them. Got a call a few days later. Well, this thing still isn't any faster. What do you mean? Well, when I get on the internet, it's still not any faster. Dude.
You didn't say that.
We don't have any control on that. Yes, the machine runs faster now because now you're not running the video off the motherboard. It's got its own memory. It's going to do faster there. But when it hits the internet, all bets are off. You know, it is what it is.
Right. You know, even I, every once in a while, I get a stutter when I'm looking at a video online, and I know it's not my machine, and I know it's not my connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's the other end.
Yeah, and it's still
Whatever server they're serving it out of had a bit of a stutter.
Or anywhere in between.
Or anywhere in between, right.
You want to see something weird, do a trace route.
Do a trace route.
And how many jumps are there between my computer, in fact, my computer I'm sitting on my desk and my computer sitting on the other desk when it has to go through the internet?
Yeah.
Yes, you get an average of 15 or 20 hops. You can get up to 30. It'll only show you up to 30 on the standard trace route. You can change that. But you show that hop, and you'll see some hops are 15 milliseconds, 20 milliseconds. Some are 100 milliseconds to get to the next one, 200 milliseconds. Now, add all those up, and that's the delay between you and them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a ridiculously large amount of money when you're talking about computer speeds.
Yep. And especially
and video, trying to sync audio and video together.
Right.
That was the other thing I thought the earlier caller was going to say. Listening to Bluetooth headsets, the audio can be out of sync from the video because they're going over different wireless channels.
Right.
Yep. And the other thing, too, is, you know, when you're connecting like that, you know, like you said, doing all those hops, and then what infrastructure they're on. And connecting to.
That's exactly.
I mean, you can have, you're on Greenlight, but yet if you're connecting to some other server that's hanging off of, say, still phone line, and they're using that as their uplink in, you know, you can't improve that. It is what it is, and you can spend all the money you want, but if those other particular services don't have the high speed and everything else, infrastructure, you're all dressed up and no place to go.
A friend of mine was asking about Tor the other day. So I said, okay, let me come over. And I got her set up on Tor. And we talked about that. And she said, but it's very slow. I said, yes, Tor can be very slow. You're going through a whole bunch of other servers. There's all kinds of encryption and stuff going on. And that slows it down. Plus, the servers that you're going to are kind of sketchy anyway. And so they're probably not the highest. Yes, it's going to be slow. Get over it. That's what Tor can be slow. And not always, but it can be.
And we kind of have the weird oxymoron that we were here in the U.S. We were among the first to get internet services, but because our infrastructure is so old, sometimes your line is going to go over a 100-year-old phone line,
right.
Buried somewhere. Because the infrastructure is so old, it's very, very hard for us to get higher speed. So everyone has to install new lines. So that's what we're seeing with Greenlight. They have to run a new fiber line to your house because the coax lines you have for your cable TV. Remember when cable TV came to the house 20 years ago? And that was such a big thing. They had to run a new wire to your house. Every new technology needs new wires. And so we're seeing a lot of municipalities updating their infrastructure by putting in new fiber bundles. And as fiber technology gets even better, you can carry more data over the same fiber and more data over the same bundle. We are not stock experts, but I would say buy stock in Corning.
Yeah.
Between Gorilla Glass and fiber optic wire, they are really probably set for
They know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The problem, of course, is that in many municipalities, the currently entrenched companies that do phone and cable are have influence.
Right.
Let's just put it that way, with the legislatures, and the legislatures are saying, no, we won't allow new technologies to come in. Well, that's ridiculously short-sighted, as my friend Jerry Seward says. Fast, high-speed internet is the Erie Canal of the 21st century.
Right.
And without it, we have huge issues in terms of people, for example, in Rochester, moving away.
Yep.
You know, we all want fast internet.
Yeah.
We all want it to be quick, and we want it to be inexpensive, and we want it to be ubiquitous.
And
the way you get that is with a municipality.
And we hear so much about fibers as being the new, you know, the higher speed. There are stories about how much dark fiber there is in Rochester, especially inside the inner loop. Fiber that was run back
in the X inner loop.
During the boom of the 80s and 90s, that isn't being used because it's been priced out of reach. You know, at our office, we called up, you know, the local phone company to ask about voice over IP.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yeah, sure, $300 a line. We said, no. And so then we call up the cable company and say voice over IP, and I say, oh, yeah, $10,000 to run a cable to your house or your office, and we said no, so we're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to talk to one of the fiber companies to see if they're close enough to us to get fiber to our office.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Judy, somewhere out on the web.
No, Webster.
A Webster.
Oh, jeez.
You guys are funny. Anyway. Sometimes you talk way over my head, but your conversation this morning kind of fits with where I am at the moment. I want to replace my modem from Time Warner.
Yeah.
And I just went out yesterday briefly, and what the girl from Time Warner told me was that I needed a dual modem with router capabilities.
Sure.
And when I started looking at them yesterday, there were many with different download speeds and everything. So that kind of went in with your conversation earlier about no matter what your speed is, it may not be any faster.
Right.
I'm wondering if you could just kind of give me any guidance to a good modem/router.
Okay, so you're on Time Warner.
Yes, and I'm using their modem combination router.
Right.
And I'm paying a monthly fee for that.
Right. One thing that you need to be aware of is there's a standard called DOCSIS, DOCSIS, stands for Data Over Cable Service Interface Specification. And it's an international communication standard and blah, 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 blah. DOCSIS 3 is what we have here in Rochester. And now I'm going to ask you to hold on. We have to take a quick break. So stay on the line. Can you do that for me?
Sure.
Excellent. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Judy from Webster, New York, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Once again, happy birthday to little Sure Shot, Annie Oakley. And we are on the line with Judy from Webster, New York, and we're talking about modems. Cable modems.
Yes.
Yeah. And Steve...
One of the things... So my company, we sell cable modems, and I do a lot of setups for customers. We really like the Aeris 6141 or the Zoom 5370 models.
What is this Aeris one?
Aeris 6141.
Okay.
Or the Zoom 5370. We like Zoom because it's an old name. We used to sell Zoom modems all the time. And Aeris used to be Motorola, and we liked Motorola because... they created radio, basically, way back then.
Yeah.
The one thing we don't recommend is buying a cable modem and wireless router in the same box. We recommend two boxes. The cable modem standards don't change very often, where the wireless standards do. So most of the cable modems, dual units you find now, will have a wireless N router in it, which is 300 megabit. You know, so that's sort of the speed. We're already seeing AC routers becoming common, which is four times faster. And there are even faster wireless routers coming out over the next year or two. So if you buy a cable modem with wireless built into it, it makes it much harder to get faster wireless without replacing the whole box.
So well, usually you have a Lynx router.
Mm-hmm.
Which
and that has wireless in it?
They took off my machine when Time Warner came in.
Sure.
And put in their box. So I wondered about using that and then just buying a modem.
Right, because Time Warner wants to charge you extra. So they charge you $10 a month for the wired internet and an extra $5 a month for wireless. If you would have left your own wireless router in, they couldn't charge you for it on theirs.
Well, you didn't tell me that.
Yeah.
Really?
Huh. That's not surprising.
Really?
Unfortunately, yeah. So getting your own modem and then getting your own wireless router, it's two boxes that you have to have, but it makes it much easier later on to upgrade
and
to something faster.
And two outlets that you have to plug into.
Two power outlets, yeah, and a little cable running between them. But generally speaking, it works out better in the long run for having that.
The ability to do that means that, you know, if you want to upgrade one or the other, you don't have to lose both.
Right. And the speed of the cable modem right now, Time Warner's maximum speed is 300. If you've just got standard internet, you're probably paying for 20. Time Warner's maximum is 50. So virtually all of the cable modems you buy online are capable of 300. Time Warner is supposed to be going to 300 by the end of the year as part of the Charter merger. So that's some of the numbers you were seeing about. I've also posted on the Soundbites website a link to Time Warner's approved modems. It makes it much easier to get Time Warner to switch to an approved modem than it is to buy one randomly.
Okay, I'll look at that.
But yeah, the Motorola Aeris 6141, great little modem. It's under $100. Got blinky lights on the front to tell you what to do.
It's the best part.
Yeah, best part is the blinky lights.
But the Aeris 6141 is a dual?
No, that's internet modem only, and then you would get your own wireless router separately.
Now, are you also getting phone service through Time Warner?
I am, and the only reason I have phone service through them is because my alarm is hooked up to my phone line.
So you will also need to get a coax splitter because you're going to need to split your cable wire. So the phone modem you currently have, you will keep to run your phone, and they'll stop charging your rent on it. So you have to keep checking your bill to make sure they stopped charging your rent on it.
Yeah, well, that was the reason why I called them last month and this month, because they raised my phone $10.
Yep.
And told me that I was on some kind of a contract, which they never told me originally.
Probably some promotion they sent you up. So you have to ask for the new promotion to get your bill back down again.
Well, I did, and they gave it to me for 1 month, and then this month it came back again, and when I called, they argued with me and said I couldn't have it because I was an existing customer.
Well, ask them for a different deal, or hang up, call back, and get a different person.
Right.
I did twice.
Yeah.
Got the same answer.
Right.
Wow.
You might want to, you know, this ends up being technical and convoluted. You might want to talk with a group like
Stop the Cap.
You might want to talk to the folks over at MacGav or any of the other places in town that do this, and have them come out and do it for you. That way they know all the pieces and parts and all the ups and downs, and will be able to help you with that.
We have heard from several of our customers that if you go to a Time Warner office, they will give you the cable splitter for free.
Oh, okay.
It's just a tiny little. It's a tiny little thing.
It's a little thing, and then you need two other cables because you got one in and two outs. But then they throw in like an Ethernet cable too, and the one pack I did see when I went on an install with a customer, they gave them like 30 feet of wire, and you need 6 inches,
right?
To go. But yeah, it's nice.
All right, and as far as like the Lynx router that I have,
right.
I mean, I've had it probably maybe 4 years. Would that be probably too old?
Well, as long as it's still working, Linksys is a good company. They make good products. You know, nobody knows how long any hardware device will last.
Okay.
But a new one would be faster and
a new
and
one would likely be faster and a little better all the way around, yeah.
All right. Okay. Thank you, guys.
All right. Good luck. Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah, it gets convoluted, which is why I tend to suggest that people talk to experts who know a little bit more about the ins and outs, pieces and parts.
According to Stop the Cap, stopthecap.com, our wonderful friend of the show, Phil Dampier, Charter has announced they're going to stop Time Warner upgrades until 2017.
Of course they are.
So maybe not by the end of this year.
Right.
Will we see the 300 they said they were going to give us?
Right.
Oh, well.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jay from Rochester, New York. Hi, Jay, what's up?
Hi. I want to thank the last caller, basically because a lot of the questions that she asked, I was going to ask also.
Good.
So a lot of the Time Warner stuff and this whole Stop the Cap thing, I was looking on your website and saw a lot of that information and all the steps that you that the full article says you have to go through and the research you have to do. And I was really going to try to do it one day soon.
Yep.
But you said that there's some people locally.
Well, yeah, and we don't, we try, you know, we try not to single out anybody, but a number of the vendors in town will help you do that. I happen to know that Mac Ave does that, and I must assume that the others in town do as well, that if you go to them, they have people who know what they're talking about. We have Steve on the phone. Yeah.
We have people bring in their cable bill and show them where they can cut duplicate services. We had one customer that was paying for 14 DVRs. They had one.
Wow.
And so people get a $300 or $400 cable bill. They grumble about it, but then they pay it without looking at what's on it.
I guess I'm not understanding. So where did you say I should look? Oh.
Well, there are a number of places in town, and we don't like to.
To mention any one specific vendor, I know, but
the company I happen to work for is
a vendor that does what? What type of vendor am I looking for?
Well, we sell cable modems, we sell home setup services.
You're saying people who install those things.
Right. Well, no. Steve works for a company called MacAv. They are an Apple dealer.
Okay.
In addition to that, they sell cable modems and do installations and all that other stuff. So they have knowledgeable people who know how to do all that stuff.
Right, and we have people bring their cable bill into us, and we can show them where they can save money, where they're getting duplicate services. We find all kinds of crazy things. We've seen customers that have had, you know, Spanish channel packages, and they don't speak Spanish. So,
sure.
You know, I in my heart, I want to believe it's a typo. Somebody called up and wanted Spanish added to their cable package, and that was one account digit off from somebody else's.
Right.
So it was an accident that this package got put on their bill for $50 a month. I know it's not, but I want to believe it is.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's nice to think that.
Yeah.
I'll look at a few of the dealers and maybe I'll stop by MacAv or something.
Sure.
But second, hopefully quick question. You used to mention that there is a service where I can put in my cell phone number and get a text before, like 15 minutes before your show starts?
Yes, that was up for a while and then it was down and now I'm working to get it back up again. And when it is, I will announce to everybody that it is ready.
Okay.
Yeah, it's there's a small issue that we've put that on a host serving company. You know, there are a bunch of host serving companies around the world, right? The one we put it on got blacklisted for somebody else who was on it. So now I just have to move it somewhere else and reset it all up and blah, 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 blah. So it's on my list, and I'll move it higher up the list now, and we'll get that done. Yeah, I want to be able to say to anybody, you know, go here, put in your information, and we'll send you a little reminder 15 minutes before the show starts that we're up, and you should listen.
Mm-hmm. Although...
Okay.
I almost hate to say, but most calendar programs have a reminder feature.
Well, but that's
in.
Exactly right. But people don't. They're not at their calendar.
Yep.
And they don't put it in, and they don't remember to make it year after year, and et cetera, et cetera. So,
speaking of which, I have a reminder to turn off my cellular, and I did.
There you go.
I actually put a comment on the website when you did that giveaway.
Yeah.
And I asked about that. I didn't know if that was the best place to put it. And I did some research this week, and I couldn't pinpoint exactly what service it might be. But you're saying that the service you used to use is currently not available.
Right. It is currently not available, but I'm hoping to bring it back shortly, if not soon.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the info.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, we'll like I said, it's just a matter of moving it to another server and resetting everything up again, and that takes time, and I just haven't done it yet, and I have to.
And it's always frustrating on these shared servers when someone else gets blacklisted and then your site goes down. I've had that happen to a few of my customers.
Right.
It's even happened to Roadrunner, two or three times in the last few years. Someone using Roadrunner services, gets blacklisted, and so the blacklist companies get a little overzealous and blacklist rr.com.
Yeah.
And so every one of Time Warner's 100 million customers now cannot send email.
Right, right. And it happened, and it's certainly not my fault. It's certainly not the fault of 99.9% of the people who are on that server.
Right.
Stuff happens. And so it's actually easier at this point to just move to another service than it is to try to straighten this out again, because the person who caused the issue is not moving. Unless the company decides to dump them, which is a separate and legal process, it's just easier for me.
I just read about some company that's a spam-friendly server, and Google and Yahoo and some of the other internet services are trying to get the company shut down, but there's no real law they can use to shut them down, even though this server is allowing spam.
Yep.
And it's tough.
Yep. And this, the service that I was providing is an opt-in service. You have to say, I want this, and then you have to say, I don't want this.
Right.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Bob?
For the woman who's chasing cable, Time Warner will give you cable. They will also give you the good quality ends they use on them. Mm-hmm. You just got to go to like a big box store and buy the crimp tool.
Which is a little beyond some people, but certainly doable. Thank you.
Yeah, but it's not all that hard.
Right. Yeah, okay, thanks.
I want to make that suggestion.
Sure. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And that helps with having too much cable lying around. We found that when we're buying cable, a 3-foot cable costs the same as a 6-foot cable.
Yep.
Why? Well, because they got to pay for the ends anyway, and the cost of the cable in the middle is almost insignificant.
Yes. Right. Well, and that's why I know a lot of people who buy big cable.
Mm-hmm.
They buy, spools of cable and boxes of ends and a crimp tool and make their own whenever they need them. Absolutely.
In fact, for the longest time, when we provided that service for customers, we needed a way to know how much cable we're using to, know how to bill it. And I kept saying, there's got to be like something on the front. I'm remembering yarn and fabric from when I was a kid. It's got to be something you put on the front to tell you how much you've measured. Well, now they actually stamp a foot marker on the cable itself.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
And patent it.
I have trouble making cables anymore because of my hands. I have arthritis, and it's hard for me, but it's a good skill to have. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Nice music. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I'll tell you, the skill sets that are dying are things like being able to solder, using crimp tools, because we just go out and buy stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be if you wanted, if something went wrong with one of your boards, you fixed it yourself. You soldered, you soldered it. You pulled chips out, you put chips in, you soldered stuff, you did things. Now, poof, no, throw it away, get a new one.
And that's what I wanted to bring up. There are two maker spaces. There's the RochesterMakerspace.org and Interlock Rochester, which deal with you know, the whole maker movement. And so you can learn how to solder, 3D print, right, all that type of stuff. I'm posting links to them now. And they do some really cool stuff. At the cider meeting last week, we had Skip Metz, who's he's a for ergonomic engineer from Kodak, but he's gotten into 3D limb prosthetics.
Right.
And there's this whole maker movement of printing 3D limbs for children, you know, for part, cost of materials, so $40-$50 the cost of materials, instead of, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for an actual prosthetic limb that they're going to outgrow in a few months anyway.
Right.
And so these...
They do it for casts as well now.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, these guys that go to the hackerspace and go to the makerspace, free, open to the public. Just show up. You know, you'll find someone that will help you with pretty much anything you're interested in.
Yep. On that note, one of the things I saw on Facebook, which kind of threw a light on, is our society right now is really missing out a lot of the younger kids in that one, they don't offer shop classes anymore in school.
Yep.
They don't offer cooking classes in school, homemaking. So a lot of these kids don't know how to sew, cook, or even, I used to love shop class. Yep. They don't have it anymore.
When I was a kid, boys went to shop, wood metal shop, and girls went to, you know, home ec.
Right.
Not my son, went through Fairport High School. Everybody takes shop and, they don't call it home ec, what they call it? Culinary.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's technology and culinary, and
these
so
are
boys,
life skills.
Boys and girls learn how to cook, and so one of his final exams is he had to cook us breakfast one morning and document it, and we had to sign his report card and grade him on how good the eggs were.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
some schools still are.
A lot of schools still are dropping it, and unfortunately, that's what's leading to a lot of these kids fast food eating or eating out constantly because they don't know how to cook. They don't know how to even sew on a simple thing like a button. Oh, do that. They, you know, it's sad. Well, it's just like which it's been going around for the longest time, that they've done away in schools is cursive.
Yeah.
You know, press.
Yeah.
Some kids, like, and I've said this over time, when I was back in the day and had a bunch of folks and I was taking on, you know, applicants and have them fill out a job applicant. It was appalling. My late wife and I would sit there and look at some of these applicants. You couldn't make out the handwriting. It's atrocious.
Yep.
Because these kids are so used to typing, they don't know how to write.
Mm-hmm. As a faculty member at RIT, I will not accept handwritten assignments anymore. I can't read them. I can't take the time to read them. I'm not going to decipher them anymore. I say you give it to me electronically, and you type it.
And we'll recommend this composition class. In fact, my son going to MCC this fall. He has to take a writing composition class.
Right.
Yep. And hopefully,
there's a lab at RIT that will help you learn to write, and will also help you learn to. Right.
Yeah.
You know, both putting a sentence together and making marks on paper.
Yep.
But because most people don't ever do either one anymore.
And it's terrible. I mean, like,
you know, and it's sad, but I tell my students all the time, look, here's the reality. I don't care how brilliant you are. I don't care how precious a snowflake you are.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't read your writing, or they can't understand what you've written, they will not hire you.
Exactly. And most places you go to fill out a job application, it's not on a terminal. They hand you a piece of paper and a pen and say, go over there to the desk and fill it out.
Again, because of my arthritis being so bad, my handwriting is now atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that, and so I slow down and I'm very careful
but
most of the time.
Yeah, but it's gotten so bad.
Yeah.
I mean...
It's a very
scary.
Tough
it's
thing.
Scary.
And I'm not talking about English is not your first language and,
nope.
I'm not, and none of that stuff. I'm talking strictly about the fact that it's rarely taught anymore it's not important. It's not, you know, the kids are not taught how important it is. And so, and I don't care. Like I said, but when you go to get a job, they are going to want to see a sample of your work.
Mm-hmm.
And if your work is unintelligible, either because the sentences don't make any sense or the handwriting is atrocious, they'll go on to the next candidate. That's a cruel, cold, but true fact. And so, and it's just a matter of, it's just a matter of making these kids, once they understand that it is actually important, you know, they all get to it. They all get it. So it all works out. But you have to remind them. You have to teach them that it is that way. All right, our next caller is Jason, all the way from Altoona, PA. How are you, Jason? What's up?
Not too bad. Hey, Nick, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. How's the weather down there?
Well, the last storm just passed, so for the moment it's okay. But I'll let you know again in 20 minutes. You know how that goes.
Yeah, exactly. Are they heading north or are they heading east?
Yes. calling in regards to the whole Maker thing and them not offering things in school. I'm originally from Arcade, New York, and I went to Pioneer.
Yeah.
And we had, when I went through high school, of course, I graduated in 99. We went through and boys and girls had shop and had home ec.
Right.
But it was a school culture thing that the kids who went to Votech were the ones who couldn't hack it to do the regular school. You know
There's
what I mean?
There's a stigma there. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And I always wanted to go to BOCES to learn the computer stuff, but that was the stigma where all the dumb kids had
right,
to go.
Right, right, right.
And I'll tell you this.
It
having,
was never true.
Having gone the mm-hmm. computer track and gone sciences, I then went into retail. I now work for the railroad. I have a wonderful job and a wonderful family that the railroad supports. But the simple fact is, now that I'm looking back, I wish I had said to hell with what the culture said, and I wish I had gone to Votech, because the things I want to do just for hobbying, I want to know how to weld. I want to know how to use a lathe. I want to know how to use all this stuff. And, yeah, YouTube is great, but if you don't already have experience, investing money in decent equipment to learn on can be a really scary task. I mean, even a cheap welder that has any qualifications of being good is going to bring you $300-$400.
Yep. I'll tell you, when I was much younger, and I spent 20 years as a professional actor, you don't start out doing Hollywood movies. Right? You start out in regional theater and in local theater groups. And if you're the guy who can A, act, and B, hang lights, and C, build sets, you're way more valuable. So, you know, when I showed them I could rewire a plug, and when I showed them I could hammer a nail, and when I showed them I could build a flat and a riser and a set, immediately you're far ahead of the game. Than the other folks. And it's just the skill set. It's not a difficult skill set. It's just, you're right, people aren't exposed to it, and so it's somehow magic.
Yep. And like I said, I went through the computer track. That was where my education focused on. I mean, I grew up in the middle of the original dot-com bubble.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah, I know, times have changed, right?
Yeah.
But one of the I'm not a big YouTuber yet, probably never will be, but if you go to my YouTube page, if you look for JDG Industries, I'm just starting out, the biggest resource I have on my YouTube page is a link to other people, and there are kids who are making stuff that it's unbelievable what they're doing. And especially in today's culture, you're like, how do their parents agree to let them do it? But I highly recommend it to any parents who are listening who are wondering, you know, is their kid getting the fullest education that they can? Take a look at the people that I've subscribed to. I share my subscription publicly for that reason. There's a bunch of people there that show the benefits of making and what you can pull off with rudimentary tools and very little investment, and help your kids realize that there's more to life than just the computers. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything away from computers. They're wonderful, they're great, they've improved our lives immensely.
Yep.
But there's more than just that.
And, yep. And somebody has to learn how to build them and learn how to make them better, and that whole
There's a guy named Mike Rowe, R-O-W-E, and he does most of the voiceovers on the Discovery Channel,
yep.
And he used to have a show,
Dirty Jobs.
And he has a whole thing that he talks about how not everybody has to get a college degree. Lots of people work with their hands and do good things. I kept telling my daughter all her life, be a plumber. You'll make way more money than anybody else. But the reality is that we're losing those skill sets.
Yep.
You know, finding people who are
the Jazz 90.1 Club Calendar highlights.
Apparently we're close to being done.
All right, well, guys, take care, and I'll hope to try and listen to you again next week.
Thanks, Jason. Thank you. Have fun and stay dry, will you?
Yeah, I'll give it an honest try.
There you go. Thanks. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next week. It's the only way you're going to get in. Calling at the very end of the show kind of doesn't work. But we will be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Sound Bites. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is back to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we'll be back in just 166 hours to get more of your questions, for you to hear more of our nonsense, and to just generally have a lot more fun on Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.